John,
Merrily.
how are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm good.
Yeah.
I'm good.
Yeah. Good.
I'm good.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, me too. I'm good. I'm good.
Are we trying to talk ourselves into it or what?
Just
Yeah, all
at this moment.
that.
Yeah. Perfect. Everything's perfect.
Did you get your computer running? Did you
Not
get it?
well. I'm waiting for parts. I have two sets of parts coming in a tower, and
Okay.
one's supposed to come for before 8 o'clock. So I'm waiting.
Yeah.
I have spent some time pulling wires and things. I talked to a technician who gave me. We exchanged model numbers and serial numbers and stuff like that. It's. I think he. I hope he didn't think he was talking to another technician because that would be a huge mistake. But we'll see how it goes. I'm, with any luck at all, I will be operational and in the queue sometime tomorrow by tomorrow morning,
Very good.
and back to normal. With any luck at all, I didn't realize, frankly, couple of things have come to mind today about this. First of all, I didn't realize how much I depended on the operational side of a computer, a good one, not just being able to open it up and run a Windows 7 machine with no drive, no nothing. Just I'm too impatient for that. The other thing is the socialization of the species in gender, the difference between men and women.
And they're,
Men.
yeah.
Well, in this culture, men bring home the bacon, women cook the bacon. Yeah, that's the socialization of Western culture.
Okay.
Women are cautious, caring, like babies, do caregivers, work in hospitals, work in rest homes, take care of old people. Men tend to play pool, live in the bar, and do whatever else they do, and be socialized the other way. When that gets involved in business, where you have the socialization change of the two genders talking to one another about something that is neutral, but still needs to be done in the bring home the bacon, cook the bacon context, it's very interesting how that works out. And I have found, I'll be through in a minute. I have found
Okay.
that the best way to break the ice after I'm done bumbling with, let's say, a female counterparty who wonders why I'm such a dinosaur, is when she finally asks, "Is there anything else I can do for you, sir?" I say all the time, I say, "Yes, there is. I'd like you to send me some money."
Yeah.
Every time I do that, it turns out very well. It's
Right.
the ice is broken, everybody laughed, you have a good time. It's terrific. That seems to be the way to take the edge off of what could have been a dicey afternoon. But yeah, it's fine. I'm happy.
Good. Good. Well, that's kind of fun to end every call like that, service call like
Yeah,
that.
yes, yes. What else
Yeah.
can I do for you, sir? You can send me money. Yes, send money. And I always get, all the answers are wonderful. The best one I got within the last 5 days is me first, then you. I'll send you money after I get my own money. Thank you.
Right.
Yeah,
Right.
me first, not you. I'm ahead of you, pal. But they get it. They get it right away. It's funny about money, funny about culture. I
Culture,
love it.
just the way it is.
Yeah, it's a fact, right? Everybody wants money, needs money. They like to talk about money sometimes, based on how much they've got or don't have, or how much stuff costs or shouldn't cost. Or...
Okay, so to that, there was an ad on Facebook for a an interview. Something like they wanted to put you in a magazine or something like that, for free. They're going to write up a whole article and this and that. I don't remember who it was, but so I'm looking at it. And I'm like, what is this all about? So of course I'm gonna kind of research, right? Play around. And you just had to fill out the questionnaire. And they're asking how much your revenue is. And I started to laugh. I thought to myself, why does your hand have to be in my pocket if you're willing to just write something up? What does my money have anything to do with you?
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
What happened to my value? What happened to what I've done in the world? Why do you have to know the digits? You know, and it's like total turn off.
Of course, I would answer that with, a check, 2024 Forbes, Forbes richest people in the world, Forbes December magazine on wealth or whatever. I'm giving some obscure fucking answer that takes them off into the weeds.
Yeah. It's like, since when do people feel entitled to know what other people make?
Well, but you see, once you've spotted that right away, right? And you're
Yep.
correct. But what I like to do that case, since they've wasted my time, I want waste their time.
Yeah.
So
Okay.
if I want to give them something that causes them to chase the nut somewhere to think they've got me, I want to send them off into, another zone. Then they can come back and talk to me, of course. And then my voice will go to voicemail. The call will go to voicemail.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just a thing. I mean, if you're going to get to me, pal, here it comes.
Right. If you're gonna kick me, I'm gonna kick you back.
I'm gonna kick you right back. I mean, just I'm not gonna spend time on this, but here's the deal. I
Right.
want you to call. I've sold some. I've got call this number and he'll give you everything you need to know. It's my publicist. I'll tell you everything. And I'll give him some random ass phone number and I'll even call him.
Yeah, I mean, I don't do those things, but
Oh
I
no,
just take
you're a wonderful
what?
person. You're a wonderful person. I mean, full of charm and ethics. So I have no ethics.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I just shake my head like, when are we gonna get it? You know, like just when? It's like, so what you're doing to this company, right? Who sends out this questionnaire?
Right.
Question number two is, how much money do you make? That is going to dictate my value.
Well, you, of course, of all people, would be the worst person in the world to ask that question to because that's nothing about what you're about at all.
I know.
There are people who would think that's how they're going to get because they want to be on the ladder someplace. So they want to be on the trillionaire, billionaire, whatever it is, ladder.
But
But
you know
in
what?
this,
Go ahead. I'm
well, if
sorry. Go
you're
ahead.
in, well, no, in this marketplace, unless you're a billionaire at least, don't bother to apply. There's thousands of billionaires. So, that are vacant, mentally vacant. They got lucky. I know some, they got in the way of progress, literally got in the way of it.
I understand. I understand. And you know, I just sit there and I think, don't know, it just frustrates me. It just frustrates me. It's like you don't have any value unless you have digits behind your name. Never mind what you've accomplished, who you are, what you've done for the world, none of that stuff. Just tell me how much money. It's like it's none of your business. It's nobody's business. Like nobody. We should have financial privacy all the way around.
Well, we should just get rid of the capitalist system altogether would be another idea. I'm not advocating, fascism or anything like that. But I also think that any great moves in culture are too hard to manage. So anyway, so I think it's still an evolutionary process of just evolution, how it comes out. The thing is, saying it publicly about people like you is that you're such a you are highly intelligent, charming, and fun, and you think on your feet, and all the stuff you want to say good about somebody, which has nothing to do with money one way or the other. You're not OCD over cash. And I know people, I ran my life with people who did that for at least 25 years. And it just sickened me.
I
Yeah,
know.
certainly,
Plus, you know,
surely.
that whole cycle of, you know, like let's say that questionnaire, right? Well, how much is your revenue? And, you know, then there's people who have a high revenue, but it gets to your ego. It's like all of a sudden you can treat people poorly. You know, like you're just so important and you don't have time for others. And it's like, look, don't mess with me. This is who I am. And it's like, wait a minute.
Well, yeah. I mean, but those are the hitches in the natural law of ethics. In the natural law of ethics, it seems to me that you would be interested in the person, interested in culture, interested in nature, interested in stuff. That's a natural law of ethics. What happens is they throw this ringer in there. This money stuff goes in there, and ethics go out the window all of a sudden. You know, all of a sudden now it's about leverage. It's now become leverage all of a sudden. Ethics, yeah, you know, ethics. But, you know, I mean, let's face it, you know, I mean, killing people is sanctioned in some situations. We just have to kill people, you know? So we're going to sanction this. We're going to figure out how to have technology remove us from nature because, after all, we don't need nature. We have technology. And that'll help us do the right thing. So, you know, it's duty-based ethics. What's my duty to keep technology going for the good of the order, as opposed to knowing who you are and caring about you? I have a duty. I have a duty. I have a duty-based ethics now. Duty. I have a duty to make more money, become more important, join the Chamber of Commerce, become a Rotarian. That's a duty.
Well, the thing is, you know, your wallet walks in before you do.
That'd be
That's
kind of funny. That's a great visual. That's a great visual.
Uh-huh.
I would love to get that right up. Get a wallet, a nice one, a little oversized wallet with a battery powered motor, and into a Rotary Club meeting, and have that little fucker walk in ahead of you, quack, squack, and duck it as you're going in. That's my wallet.
Just in case you didn't know.
Yeah, I would do that. I would do that. That'd be great. I'd love that.
Yeah. You know, it's like, come on. At that point, you know, you're just using that wallet to leverage everything. And without really understanding that by doing that, you're putting yourself in a position of never knowing if people really do love and appreciate you. You've scared them into submission.
Well, they may not understand culture either. You know, if you think that maybe they really are, can't figure out who you are, then you can tell them that your aunt died, your auntie died, and you're going to have her for dinner on Thursday night at the local park. Because some cultures eat their dead, they don't just bury them or pray over them. You know, see how that goes over.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, it's a big world, I suppose.
Try them on. Try them on. You know, give them whatever moral musing you like. Give them the consequential ethics of whoever they think they are. Well,
I just know when I walk in, I'm gonna have like monkeys and clowns and shit in front of me, and I'm gonna enter on an elephant.
I think that's cool. I mean, that's cool. But you see, that would have more power than my wallet walking in, you
Right.
see.
I'm gonna have
Yeah, that's way
jugglers
more
and
powerful. Right. I would be nothing compared to that. Yeah. I remember one night I went to midnight mass at a local Catholic cathedral, the cathedral, St. James Cathedral here in Seattle. It was midnight mass on Christmas. So, of course, the church tries to put on a big show. Well, one of the shows they did was they decided to have bugles, trumpets, and horses in the church down the main aisle. Real horses to come in and excel and cherish and whatever you do for the birth of Christ. Well, you know, the horses were not used to being in church or all the smoke or all the incense or all the other stuff
Oh
around
my
people.
gosh. Oh my God.
Yeah. Great plan, you guys.
Oh
Maybe next
gosh.
year.
So what happened?
Well, the horses just bolted and, you know, spun and didn't like it. And, you know, it didn't work. They got them out of there. Nobody got hurt, but it became silly, you know.
I can't stand the smell of incense. I can't stand it. I can only imagine, an animal, I mean, their senses are so much stronger than ours.
Oh,
How
yeah.
terrible that was for the horses.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh
And
my
then
gosh.
in the big cathedral where they burn, they have the incense burner, and it's on like a 400-foot chain from the top of the cathedral, and they spin that baby all the way to the back of the church and back forward and back and forth, back and forth. So you're incensing the birds and the flies and everybody's goes back and forth. Oh,
Doing. I mean, just people. People in different cultures, whatever it is you believe. Yeah. Okay. I mean, on the other hand, I do sage. I do that. So, I'm one of the crazy ones too. I do that every so often.
You do what? What?
Gets burn sage.
Oh yes, yeah, sage. Well, yes, of course you do. Silly me.
But it's
Yeah.
kind of the
But you
same.
see, well, it's the same kind of thing basically, but somehow if it comes from native culture, I think it's legit. And I suppose it's legit if it's from the Near East or whatever it is. But I think it's a personal thing. I think that it's I always envision an Indian alone. Bringing the sage smoke to them with their hands, not in a crowd, but I mean, I went to a lot of those things at St. Ignatius, when Cardinal Spellman was alive, he came through, and all the tribes came in from the Flathead Reservation. Big deal, big deal.
Yeah.
As the
Well, I mean,
I
tradition
don't
and
know.
ceremony, that what people believe. I mean, each his own. Each his own.
Yeah,
But there
I went to an Indian funeral along the Columbia River, and I was in a pair of tan slacks and a Hickey Freeman jacket, and I was dressed really well. I felt it was a cultural, courteous thing to do, and then I realized that I was in the funeral party because it was a friend of mine. And then I realized that the burial tradition was different. And what we do is we bury him with our hands. We get on our knees and we cover the casket with the dirt with our hands. So I ruined a complete, I don't know how many clothes I ruined that day. I got rid of everything. But I was down here digging with my fist and covering up in my $1,000 jacket and my $500 pair of pants.
Jeez. Oh my gosh, John. Wow. But I mean, speaking of which, what if we were all naked? What if we were all naked, like doing these things? We couldn't really tell what was going on. Excuse me, you know what I mean? Like what the culture was.
And doesn't that fall back to the Garden of Eden and all that business? Isn't that where that all changed?
I guess, I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I think even the people that don't wear clothes wear at least some kind of a cover. I mean, they walk around with their junk covered up, even in the Central African, where they don't have a lot of exposure. I think that's a.
I understand that, but even if you're covered up just a little bit, just imagine people just walking around naked doing what they do.
Well, what? So what? Yeah, like that's like a nudist thing. I mean, people colonize and do that. They gather up and grab, sit around and do that. Take their clothes off.
Yeah, but I mean, who are you? You know what I mean? It's just who are you? What are you doing right now? You know what I mean?
Well.
You're forced to look at the person rather than the culture. Just who are you? Because you're not together with anybody, but you're just doing that. You're just ringing those bells and throwing smoke around.
Yeah, I don't know how I feel about that. I guess, now I can throw comments around about how it is. Do I want to take my clothes off?
I'd be naked hugging the trees and feeding the crows. That crazy lady. What is she doing?
Culture's a funny thing. I don't know. It's
Well, that's what I'm
I
saying. I'm
know
trying to remove the culture
you
and just
are.
look
I
at
know
us
you are.
as human beings.
I know you are. I don't. But I think that's, I think what you're doing is you're letting, I mean, there's an ethics guide there somehow. I mean, there's I don't know if this is morality necessarily or even moral, but there's a social contract there that you've just violated. Boom. You know, because the social contract is, says that you wear clothes in public.
Right.
So if you violate the social contract, then I guess you do it in a utopian reserve somehow, where you're out with a whole bunch of people with their clothes off.
Yeah.
But then what's their social contract? How do they decide who they are?
So I don't know. Well, they're nudists.
I
They
know
got a
they are, but what
label.
is that?
I don't
Right.
know.
Right. But then how do they, so how do you subcategorize the nudists? I don't think you can get rid of the social contract one way or the
Yeah.
other. You know,
Right.
there's going to be sagging breasts, there's going to be long, you know, cocks, there's going to be all sorts of, you know, his is bigger than mine, what am I going to do? You
Yeah.
know, I mean
A
you kind of
lot
have
of
the swinging dick.
disillusionment.
Yeah, you'll have the swinging dick contest right there, you know. I don't think you can avoid it.
Right.
Yeah,
Well,
it's hard to
the reality is
avoid.
just how imperfect we are.
Oh
You
yeah,
know?
well of course. I mean, if you want to talk about imperfection, just put me in the operating room the first month with five female doctors with my pants down, having
Oh.
one of the nurses say, you know, it's okay if you swear, you
Yeah.
know, because it was. Oh yeah, I mean, whew.
I don't even know
And
that.
I was just thrilled to have anybody there. I didn't care who it was.
Yeah.
I didn't care who it was. But wow, yeah, it's I don't know. It's pretty cool. I mean, I don't know. Taking my clothes off as a part of a social contract on purpose in public, I think would be very difficult to do. Very difficult to do for me. Yeah. I like to wear that heavy cotton clothing that really protects me from everything. No. Yeah, sorry. No, no nudist colony for me.
I don't know. I don't even know how we got here. I don't even know how we got here, John.
I don't
You
even know
know,
how to apply for membership. I mean, it must be difficult. Think of the questionnaire you'd have to fill out. You want to be a nudist? Well, I don't know. Maybe I do, maybe I don't. You know, is
you
it
think you have
free?
to fill something out? I don't think you have to fill anything out.
Well, somebody's going to have to vet who you are if you're going to go into a nudist colony. And, I mean, we have nudist colonies, nudist gay colonies or groups at the University of Washington along Mottlet Cut. That it is, they are known locations. They're not so much reserve set aside. They're just known locations where gay men gather and take all their clothes off and sit on the cut. And that's where boats go back and forth, and they wave at the boats and stuff. And I think that's kind of funny. So far, no one's tried to stop that. And I don't know why anybody would bother with it one way or the other. I think that's one of the problems of, oh God, here we go with, you know, again, social contracts. The more you push, the worse it gets. So who cares?
This is probably the reason why a lot of people like to stay home.
Yes.
Stay away from other
God,
people. You know, you just
now that
want
you
to be
brought
home.
that
What?
up.
Isn't it true?
Yeah. Well, I think, well, of course, I've been kind of a homebody ever since the first outbreak of the COVID because I wasn't too sure what was going on there. And I had comorbidities, you know, a list of them,
Yeah.
and I wasn't, didn't want to really go out and test the waters. So I've
Right.
been kind of away from people, and I've kind of gotten used to that. Oh,
I think everybody has.
my door just rang. I got to go look at the door and see what just happened.
Well, I think everybody's
So,
like that. Everybody. And we all got locked down, and then you get used to being
yeah.
home and making the most of that, and it's lovely.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh.
What?
I have a computer at my front door. Oh my gosh. Oh my
Ta-da.
gosh. Oh my gosh. I just got here.
That was fast.
Wow. Yeah. Oh my gosh. It's a 5089. It's a 5084. I'm going to get one here right now. Computer.
I think Yeah, I think it's amazing how your computer went out after you finished the book.
I'm on the phone. Hi. Yes, here we are. It's a Dell new tower. Let's not talk about this though, because I don't know what to talk about. I don't know what to talk about this. Let's talk about what we're talking about. I like it better.
About being naked? Oh
yeah,
no,
yeah,
about
I like it. Yeah, I like that. Of course I like that better. Silly me.
No, it was about being home.
Yeah.
You know,
I've been
we
home
like...
more than ever since what the last 3 years or whatever it's been.
Yeah. Working from home.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And if I do go out, I go out into nature. I don't go out into like a movie or a this or that. I go out into the woods or into the shore, in this case, in the shore, to the water.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What I do.
You know, we're fortunate to be able to do that.
Yeah.
Not everybody can do that.
That's right. That's right.
You know?
You can do the same thing.
I can do the same thing, and I appreciate it every single day.
Yeah.
I appreciate my view and just no, every day, every moment of every day. And when I think about, you know, having to just be right on top of each other and no trees, just nothing but concrete and buildings and traffic. It breaks my heart.
Well,
did you ever,
I don't know.
Did
I
you,
mean, something.
What?
What?
Did you ever see like the smart cities? Did you ever see that thing about the smart cities? And
No.
that one in oh gosh, I'm forgetting where it was at. If it was like through somewhere, it was through the desert somewhere, and they were going to make like this town that was just, you know, so wide and really really long, and everything was inside of it. So you never had to go outside of this environment.
That sounds like terraforming Mars. That's
terrible.
Yeah. I mean, that's how they terraform. I mean, that's the Kim Stanley Robinson book on you know, red, blue, and green Mars, because they have to build everything under a dome, and it's very much you know, your town is however many yards by however many yards.
Yeah.
And
Well, that's what it was. It was literally only so wide and long, just kept going, going, going. Everybody was just living there. Your plants are in there, and your mall is in there, and everything that you needed was inside. And you never saw the outside. I'm like, who would ever want that?
Well, that's why I think your imagination is so wonderful. When we had the conversation yesterday about good and evil, the two rooms, you know, about the left and the right. And all the money and all the fear was in the room with four walls. When you're in the next room, of course, it was infinite.
Right.
That room was infinite. I've been thinking about that ever since yesterday.
Really?
Yeah. What an expansion of one's mind.
Yes.
To be able to walk into a room that is infinite.
Right.
When you're calling it the same. And, you know, and then I went into the other thing about how had to be movement and all that business and size and so on. And then we had people writing us, writing to us on the
love
podcast.
That.
Yeah, sending us messages.
Uh-huh.
And I mean,
I love that.
not just conversational messages. I mean, this is how it is, guys. You know, get it straight.
I love that. Love the comments, the questions, whatever. Give us a star of, show some love. Yeah.
Yeah.
Some, I mean, I love that because people start to open up and feel comfortable, you know, expressing themselves instead of just, being in the background. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you can, you know, send me as many bullets as you want, you know, see if I care. But I think you'd care. I think you should get the messages because, you know, you care about stuff like that. You really do. You've got a heart, a soul. You love people. You're good with people. Me, you know, I'm just who you have chained up in the backyard. That's all I'm good for.
Oh, God, you know, speaking of that, though, I landed on a review from Goodreads, and it just totally surprised me. Like, how did this happen? Because I
On the
don't
game?
pay.
On your book? Yeah.
And I don't know, I don't really keep up on it. I just don't. I just let it go and, have trust that God's gonna get his message out. That's it.
Well, that's what, but see, that's what keeps being proven in your case. Hate to bring it up, but that's what works, is that you allow the universe to give you the gift, and it does. People like me keep positioning ourselves to receive the gift, and we always miss it. You know? And you just sit there and smile and wait, and the gift lands on your head. You know? I sit there with a net running around trying to grab it, and it gets away.
That's the beauty of it, though, having all putting all your faith and trust in God, in and what that means is in love. So if you know that you're operating in love all day, that is literally your focus all day, no matter what happens, then favor is going to come your way,
Do you
whatever it
think
is.
that love, God, and nature are one in terms of the ethics of who they are?
Because it's all love. Absolutely. That's why God is in the garden, nature.
So is nature then a moral guru for for humanity? Do we follow nature's
You know what?
God?
I think it is. I really do. I've been given so many truths from the trees, just nature. A lot of communication going on there.
I think I want that. I want to believe that. I really do. I feel like when I talk to you, I feel like I've gone to a retreat someplace. I want to believe that, Father. I do want to believe that. Give me another half hour and see if I can get to that. Yeah.
Yes. The thing is, we don't have a lot of time to slow down. Just slow down and really enjoy it. Like, when was the last time you just stopped and leaned up against a tree and read a book or something?
Well, let's take this as today's an example. For example, now I just had a new tower arrive. It's in a box. Okay. So now that pressure is off of me. So now when we're through talking, do I rip open the box or I just don't rip open the box? Or you'll sit and look out the window for a while, have a cup of coffee and enjoy myself or whatever, and just sleep? Or do I just rip into the box? What do I do?
Well, it's going to be there waiting for you. But
Yeah.
the hours are passing. And I think that's
Ah.
probably, yeah, that's my problem. I think with maybe procrastination, people would call it. I'm
Yeah.
procrastinating. I'm not really procrastinating. I'm literally enjoying the day. The sun is out and I'm just in it. And then as the night starts to fall and it's then I for some reason get busy.
You get busy as the sun goes down. You
I'm
are
more into it.
you're nocturnal. You're like a cat. I'm diurnal. I'm a dark 30 in the morning and you're at night. We're working at opposite ends of the spectrum.
I think I just, like the world is asleep to me and it's all calm, and then I can think and get into whatever it is I'm doing. And I love that. And the day hours are really for me in the sun.
So you sort of bake your brain until you tell it, and then at night you go down there and do it. I don't mean bake your brain. That's not literal. I mean it just sit in the sun.
I don't really sit in the sun. I'm just enamored by the beauty of the world when it's lit up.
Well, and I mean the sunshine, of course, that's the source material. Of who we are. I mean, everything is, you know, if you build a fire, you're answering the sun in kind directly. That comes and goes. That's the tree. If you burn the tree, the sun is talking back to the sun. Heat is heat. Radiation is radiation. It's all the same mix. We're in it.
You know
And
what I find interesting? I typically get called out at a certain time of day. I've
By
noticed that.
nature? Nature calls you out?
Like if it's cloudy out or something and you can't really see the sun, there will be that moment when the sun is peeking through and I'll be inspired without even knowing it. It's just like it's time to go outside. It's time to walk the dogs or something, you know? And I'll go outside and then there's the sun just peeking through the clouds and I just acknowledge the sun. Like I was called out. It's a beautiful
Is there a
thing.
difference between knowledge and belief in that case? You
Knowledge and
believe,
belief of what?
yeah. Well, you believe that the sun is going to be there, therefore you stand by for it, or
Nope,
you have a knowledge. No.
neither, none of it. I'm
You ever watch
literally
the
just
weather report? You ever watch the weather report?
no. I usually no, I'm just doing whatever it is I'm doing and then
Something calls to you.
I just get inspired and I never question it. I'll just put down whatever it is I'm doing and go outside. And then I acknowledge the sun.
How do you become that pure and wonderful anyway? How does anybody get that wonderful to just answer the call to nature? When I wrote Fight for the Quantum, I wrote a story about a woman who couldn't read and held a book every morning. She knew the book was important to her. She held the book and went outside and met with nature. And I mean, with real heavy duty nature, like bears and animals and, pumas and whatever. But I think she was Russian, as I recall. I forgot now. Anyway, she was called. She was called to nature. Well enough that people have written about her, and I did too. I just picked up somebody else's story. But yeah, and there you are, you see. You're just being called to nature. You know, it's like you're listening to nature's version of the Hound of the Baskerville. I mean, there it's calling to you, out you go.
You
And
know, if I had to say there was when there was a time for a like a I don't know, maybe it was a timeline shift or just a I don't know, just a shift in general was 2017.
what happened then?
I don't know. But 2017, like for example, I have a lot of videos coming up on my memory for Facebook and it was 2017, 17, 17, like really? 'Cause I'm not paying attention. You know, back then I wasn't, and now it just every time it pops up, I'm noticing it's 17, and
And
I know
what
exact.
happened? How did you change? What did you do in 2017? Because that's an interesting year for me as well. Interesting year for me. I had a lot of stuff happen in 2017, a whole bunch of stuff.
Okay. Well, I don't know exactly. I just know that I was really at one with nature, like that was. I remember just walking through the trees and thinking to myself, all my answers are here. Like nature tells us everything we need to know. I remember thinking that to myself. That was also the year that I had the epiphany that money was going to become obsolete because everyone would have it. Everyone would have so much that it wouldn't have any meaning anymore. And I knew that was coming. And then that was also the year that the big not what was it not an eagle what is it the hawk
The
the red
hawk,
tail
the
yeah the red
red
tail
tail hawk,
hawk
yeah.
sat on the fence and it was just just staring at me and I just stopped in my tracks and looked at him like oh my gosh you are so beautiful and just you know but it's all in a day. So you're not really thinking too much about it, but these things are happening. And then I was sun gazing a lot. And that's when I had a most definite shift in my abilities. Like I could hear things, I could see things that people couldn't do either. And that's when I started writing the game.
Wow. So that's a pivot.
Yeah,
It pivoted
definitely.
then, 2017. Wow.
That was a
Yeah.
long time ago. It doesn't even seem like it.
Yeah, I it's yeah, I when I think about stuff in the past, I forget how far back it is too. I mean, it's time passes. This one flow of time is wonderful. Of course, that's clock time. We still have perceived time, which is really real. Our perception of time is more real than our clock time by quite a bit, but it's all right.
So what happened to you?
Well, that's the year that John died. And that had a big impact on who I was at that point. It's also the year that I got my PhD.
Oh,
And
wow.
I finished my dissertation in 2017. John died, got my dissertation, and I completely changed who I was. I changed who I was because at that point I had gone through the chairs. I reached the highest point of the academy. I had been a candidate for a long time, but I got it finished in 2017, and that's when I quit teaching too. I quit teaching in 2017. Got my PhD, stopped teaching then. Took my candidacy to a real degree. My kid died, and I started just doing things differently, completely differently. I had before that, I had always been kind of a crawler. I mean, I was always trying to get, I'm not sure about get ahead, but I was doing a lot of research, a hell of a lot of research. I was, you know, I was I had been to Harvard doing I'd done my course there at advanced statistics. I dropped out of Harvard when John got sick. Went on and did a whole bunch of stuff with George Washington. I don't know. I was in this kerfuffle, and I had these conversations with John when he was dying about his view of what I should, who I should be, what I should do.
Really?
Yeah.
What was that like?
Well, it was pretty father-son matter of fact, actually. He and I spent a lot of time together. I took him when I wasn't, when I, you know, I was, I dropped all my academics to be with him, and then I took him a lot of places to try and cure him. So he and I were on the cure path all the time. We went to Tahoma Clinic, and a lot of holistic guys that were practicing holistic medicine went to Bastyr University. We started talking about, you know, infusions, all whole kinds of stuff. And he knew he was dying because when you guess, you're dying, real simple. And so we did that together during that year. And I did some stuff that was kind of off the wall that I probably shouldn't have done in terms of just blowing people away that I was tired of, you know, like only I can do. And he and I sat at taco time one day, one afternoon, and we ate, talked about how he felt about God. And it was a lot like talking to Christopher Hitchens because John was very much of a scientist. He worked for IBM. And he knew he was dying. And he started to think, well, you know, just like Hitchens, there's no time to piss anybody off. You know, probably there's something to it. And I, of course, came from, you know, years and years and years of parochial education. So I had the background to have the conversation with him about whether or not there's deities at all, and if they do exist, why, and so on. But I look at my son across the table from me, my son, my oldest son, who is in fact dying. He's on his way, predictably going to go. And yeah, and what I think the biggest thing that came to me after the fact was that he and I were in a he finally got a point where had a pinger on his forehead, working with his finger. That was his finger, was a pinger, was electronic. He couldn't function anymore. You know, gone. Anyway, I was at Shilshole Bay at the port of Seattle. And I was under the tree. I go back to this tree a lot. And I was under this tree, parked in my truck. And I saw his Santana, his boat, come into and sail away from me into the sunset. And my son died.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So Yeah, I mean, the
But okay,
conversation is real.
but I don't think I got my answer, or did I miss it? Because you said he was saying how you should live your life.
Well, yes, yes, how I should live my life. He thought from his perspective, he was linear and he was a scientist. He was an IBM guy. I mean, he was a go-to guy for IBM. I was way too flamboyant for him, as the day to day thing. He wanted to go to work for me one time. He lasted about 3 hours. He couldn't stand it. He couldn't stand the hustle. He loved me. And we were extremely close, but we were extremely close because we didn't have to be close, you know, but we were. He admired me, I admired him for all the right reasons. After he died, I saw him, I saw him walk down the dock and hand me a davit for the boat, which I'm not sure if that was real or not, but it sure appeared to be real to me. This, I think we live in stuff, but he was, I was like a wonder to him. I to answer your question, I guess, I don't think he told me how to run my life. I think he was musing about how I ran my life, more than he was telling me how to run my life, because I had a very successful life. What's he going to say? You're doing it wrong. Can't do that. You know, so you didn't do it wrong, but I don't know how the hell you did it. How do you survive? Well, I wasn't surviving very well, frankly. I wasn't a bit happy. So I've had that experience with two kids, as you know, and in each case, I was very close to them both. And I think, you know, I mean, if you have a lot of kids, you know, there's favorites and not favorites and so on, but there really are no favorites when you get right down. When you have to circle the wagons, there's no priority. Kid's a kid, family's family. That's that. You know, there's no discussion. Everybody gets the straight shot. And so, what I noticed, I guess, I noticed the impact of the death of the children on the family. The family came apart, really. My family just dissolved, came apart, because the trauma, the associated trauma, was so hard on us, I think, because we had been there before and now we're there again. And then we'd had a, and then Christine's daughter died of leukemia. So that's three
Oh,
kids in the family that have died.
gosh.
Yeah. So
Oh.
we're thinking, you know, wait a minute, wait a minute. You know, it's like, what else you got? And,
Oh, that's just heartbreaking. Every
yeah.
parent's worst nightmare.
Yeah. Yeah, and the reflection, the courtesy, the people that are around you, what's going on. But what oh God, I mean, the moment of death is really, really remarkable. When Jeff died, he woke up. He was in the ER with at Harborview Medical Center. Doctors are in a circle around his bed holding his hand. I mean, holding their hands in a circle, like a fairy circle. They're crying because we've been there for 33 days. It was a big deal. Lots of doctors, everybody trying to save. Jeff was a wonderful kid. Anyway, he opens up his eyes. He opens up his eyes, looks at me, smiles, winks at me, and dies. I'm standing right over the top of him. And he couldn't do any of that for days. But he did it when he died. When I went to the funeral parlor to buy a casket, because he was the first one to die, and so being the father matriarch that I bought the best casket, the best vault, the best this, the best that, the best marble this, the best. I even put benches out there, you know, black marble benches. I mean, I built this. Christ, I built a church around his gravesite because I didn't know what else to do, you know. I was just devastated, and I could do that. When we had the funeral, we had people come. There was music. There was all kinds of stuff. It was like like the horses that at midnight mass. I brought them all in. I called the Seattle Police Department. I had the motorcade come up, and wherever we went, we had like 30, 40 motorcycles taking us forward. Nothing but the best for me or for my kid. Well, I got over that in a hurry, but it was very interesting how you reach out. I went up to Jeff's grave, I bet you, for 3 years, every day. Sat there, talked to him.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, 3 years?
Yeah. Takes about 3 years
Wow.
to get over it, I think. Well, you never get over it, but I spoke to that kid for 3 years at his at the sitting. I sat on the bench that I bought, put it there. I might as well sit on my bench. I got there by myself, all alone, and talked to Jeff. And
Wow.
you I've I don't know, it's I felt I was angry. I was tired of God. I mean, what the hell are you doing to me? Why me? Why my
Right.
kids? Why my family? I've gotten over all that now, I think. I mean, I'm talking about it. It's interesting. I haven't talked about it in years, but it's all very real. And you reach out for stuff, grab whatever you can grab, I mean, I went to church. I went to when he was in the hospital, I would leave the hospital, get down to the to St. James Cathedral, sit in the church, and beg God to save him.
Yeah.
Just beg him. I will do anything. I will do anything.
Right.
Just save my kid. I will do
Right.
anything. What do you need? I got it. Oh yeah. Get all that stuff.
Yeah. Talk about helpless.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, that's I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of people who can understand exactly what you went through.
Sure.
And that are going through it right at this moment. As a matter of fact.
Yeah. If you lose a spouse or a child or
Yeah.
whatever.
Yeah. When my mom passed away, I got her a bench as well. And she's buried in a cemetery that's filled with oak trees. It's just beautiful. And I would go visit her. I haven't been there in a bit. As a matter of fact, her birthday was just on the 10th. And I haven't been there in a bit because I just don't feel that she's there. I used to go because it was beautiful and I'd let the dogs run around and it was just like a quiet moment. It's a quiet moment in nature with her, just to honor my mother. But I never really felt that she was not with me, like she is with me.
You mean
So
there
that
or everywhere?
right, everywhere. She's
Yeah.
with me everywhere. Yeah. And I don't know why I'm like that. I just have absolute faith that it's not over.
Well, I think you're more correct than I was. I don't, I was reaching. I mean, I was doing what we talk about in terms of what money does do for you and how hollow it is. I could afford to do stuff that made no difference.
Right.
I had 16 doctors working on Jeff.
God.
Yeah, if one is good, two is better. 16 must work. What can I do?
Right.
And I was, it was like me. And you see, you with your spirit, your wonderfulness, got you just cut through that. It took me a long time to get through that. I'm not so sure I'm still through it. I mean, I'm certainly better than I was, but I'm still, well, I'm not really. I think I'm pretty recovered. I think I'm recovered. Yeah, I mean, you've done a lot for me personally, just you, and getting my head straight. I never told you that, but it's true.
Thank you. No,
So.
I'm sure it's really different though. When you lose a parent, it's the natural order. Not to say that it's easier, but it's the natural order.
Oh yeah.
And when you lose a child, it's not.
Yeah,
The
out of
net.
order never works.
Yeah,
Yeah,
it's
yeah. Yeah, out of
no.
order never works. Never works.
And it's reasonable to think that it's our job, to fix it. Can't let your child down. You got to fix it.
Yeah, you do feel that way. I mean, I don't know that it was, I don't think I was letting him down. I mean, I didn't feel like I, well, yes, of course you feel that way, but I mean, I was pushing the envelope on my power. I have the power. I'm telling the universe, I have the power to stop this. I can stop this. I can save my son. Don't fuck with me. I'll tell you what to do here. How many doctors do you need? Do you want a whole hospital? I'll give you one of those. What do you need? What do you need to solve this problem? I mean, I was arrogant, pushy, angry. Then I was scared. So that was a great lesson. Could have been a great lesson for me. Maybe that was my lesson in life. I don't know. Certainly one of them.
Death is like a, I don't know, I think it's best for us to come to terms with it now. Now, before we're dying, before we lose anybody else in our life, just to have a real clear understanding about what it is. That way,
Absolutely.
right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Of
That
course.
way, and that's really to understand what love is and how we were brought here and how we're going to leave. And anything that we're struggling with, it's all about attachment. You got to know it's attachment.
So if you, but attachment's not bad. I guess you just have to know. It's okay to be attached as long as you know what you're attached to or how you travel
Well,
together. What happened? I mean,
well,
yeah.
in the right context, like to be attached, it's your ego, the physical self, is attached to ownership. So we put labels on things, and especially the things that we love that are ours. This is my special, whatever it is. It can be a person or it could be a thing. Everybody knows, don't touch that because that's mine. I love it. I can't have it broken. Don't mess with it. Or, your family members. These are mine. Don't touch them. There's an attachment and an ownership. And we forget sometimes in that our fear ends up controlling that relationship instead of having faith in God that each one of us are here with a purpose. And when we're given children, we're just here to make sure they're going to be all right until they spread their wings and, find what they're here for.
Well, I believe that you're, I mean, I believe now, today, I believe you're correct. I truly do. And I had some epiphanies that came to me, that I think in other dimensions when I finally, got to the point where I calmed down, where I think that was proven to be the case. But I had to learn that. It wasn't easy for me to do. I mean, well, it probably wasn't easy for you either. I mean, you didn't wake up one morning and, figure out that you were gifted in the cosmos. I mean, that must come over time. Well, you got to learn those things and practice and realize that you are. I mean, how do you recognize that stuff? I mean, you just do somehow eventually, I guess.
I mean, looking back, I just see myself and pretty much everyone like a child. We're just literally trying to find our footing, and feel it out and see what's safe. And I don't know, we're always just that child trying to figure out who we are.
I guess, yes, as the child of the universe, as you realize, yes, of course. Yeah.
I mean, if you ask somebody about their job and stuff, is that who you are?
Well,
It's like,
in this culture, I think it is. I think that's part of the socialization of who we are. It's wrong. I don't approve of it, but I think that's the reality. You are who you are. You're your job. You are your job in many cases.
Yeah, but
In
if you
most
are your,
cases.
yeah, but then that means that my value is related to my money.
Yes, I'm not denying that. I think that's true.
And
I'm
that's
not
why a
saying
lot of
that's
people don't have value.
right. I don't have any real value. And all the real value is distorted by the capitalism. And I'm not saying that fascism is better or worse. I'm or any of that stuff. I'm saying that I think I'm saying that money and fear, as you discuss, are the reason for all kinds of problems.
Well, yeah, all of
And
them.
when you and I
All
think
of
my
them.
yeah, okay, all of them, 100%. And my comeuppance in 2017, when you were, going through epiphanies of your own, my God taking me by the nape of the neck and slamming me against the wall was I could not spend enough money to counter his position. I couldn't hire enough limousines, enough anything. I couldn't do anything.
So that should prove to us what is the value of money,
A
really?
zero.
Right.
Totally zero.
Yeah.
Zero. I've given no truck anymore. No, I walked. I mean, I literally walked away from my industry. I walked away from all that stuff. And now I have people thinking I'm crazy. I mean, they think I should join a monastery and just put on a robe and sit in the sun and read the reading because you're not worth a shit for anything else. Well, you can't. A lot of what's happened to me, you can't take away from me. I don't care who you are. I got it. I own it. I own my education. I own my history. I own who I am, and I can still sleep under a tree and gut an elk and shoot a bear. I still got that.
That's
So.
the beauty of becoming. You know, rather than just working and doing, to earn a paycheck, but becoming something that nobody can take that away from you. You actually hold it.
You want, yeah, you want it. It's yours.
Yeah, that's what we should all be striving for. That thing that nobody can take away from you because it's God-given.
I hardly agree.
But the world, I think, distracts us so much that we forget that that should really be the priority. It's just,
Well, we're allowing it to do it, though. We're allowing it to do it to media. In every way, it's. I mean, we are allowing the hegemony of media to own us, to drive us.
I mean, even now, like if you look at Instagram reels, right? And there's so many people on there saying, look, I do nothing. I do nothing and I make millions. You could do what I do. I make it in my sleep. Let me show you how I do it. And it's like, if you really think about that concept, you're still being driven by the money, and there's no time investment in the becoming.
No, I mean, who are you making better? I mean, how are you getting better in that context? How's that working for anybody?
Right, that's Satan. That's the glitter of, I'll give you everything. You can do this.
Yeah.
Just worship me. So, what am I going to do? When I worship you and I'm able to make money in my sleep, like the way these people are talking, what am I going to do with my time, with me? Am I going to be productive? Am I going to serve myself to become something? Or am I just going to piddle my time away because I can afford it?
I just believe that those people deteriorate so fast. People without purpose just fall into a pit of quicksand.
I look at them, I watch these reels, and I think to myself, okay, so you made, how many millions this year? That's fine. You're telling us all that. What has it done for you? Who are you? Who are you when you're not looking at your bank account? Did it change you at all? Are you more generous? Are you kind? Are you patient? Did it humble you?
But is there a social contract then to do something to be do you have an obligation then? Is there a social societal contract to give your money away once you get it? What do you do with it?
No. Well, what do you do with it? Well, clearly there's a lot of people who need it. Clearly. And I think that everyone is, it's like to each his own. You can have all that you want to have. We're heirs to the kingdom. You want to have the mansion, you want to have the cars, you want to have, that's all fine. Fine. But how much is enough? When other people are starving. And there's other people who actually do have value, who have, invested in themselves to learn something, but they don't have the means to share it with others. Can you support them? Or do you just stand there all smug because you've got millions and they're still struggling?
Well, I at some point, what I've noticed about people that have extreme wealth is that they end up they're targets for people taking them for whatever they can get them for, and they
Sure.
end up having whole corporate divisions designed to decide how to do two things: give away the money at some level and take advantage of the tax law. And that's and they'll have. I remember when the McCaw boys sold AT&T, they had 36 people on staff just for that very purpose. What the
Okay.
hell are we going to do?
Okay, what about this? What happens when there's no tax law? When we don't have to pay taxes anymore? We're not having to keep receipts and make up stuff about our donations and, whatever people do. What if you don't have to worry about that anymore? How is that going to change people?
Well, that's a follow-on that of the bountiful that's going to come based on what you're discussing, and I think that everything changes, the whole paradigm changes at that point. If money goes away and it's no longer part of your process of thinking even, I mean the change that has to happen, societies will not be recognizable.
Right.
Just won't be recognizable because the movement and the incentive to build and grow and so forth based on money supply, if that goes away, what replaces it that is good enough? It becomes utopian, and utopians historically have always failed. So something else has to enter that picture. What is that thing? What is that concept that comes in?
Love.
Oh yeah, I knew you'd say that. Of course, silly.
Well, because think about it. If let's say my neighbor always dresses so nice with the best clothes, name brands, and all this, and I'm looking at him, and maybe before I would covet that, now I would say, you know what, someday I'm going to do that, or I'm whatever it is, my opinion is about it, but I can't have it. Well, now all of a sudden we're equal, and I'm going to look at you and think, that looks great on you. I could have that too if I wanted it. But that's not my taste. I can go out and spend $1,000 on this jacket instead. And I can love you for your taste, and you can love me for mine, but nobody cares.
God, I mean, it seems like you're living in a commune at that point, and everybody's eating out of the same garden, and meeting every Saturday morning at the common house, and taking turns doing the dishes and whatever it is. It means it seems communal, but I don't
Why?
see the ins well, it just does, unless it's a cosmic switch. I mean, I think if you take people, if I think at least, and from my perception is, if you take people in the current context of where we are right now, and people isolate themselves away from this very thing that we're complaining about money. You know, and they go into a commune, to a shared living, common kitchen, shared lawn,
No,
maypole.
I don't want that.
I don't either. But unless you remove capitalism altogether, get rid of the banking system, get rid of the Federal Reserve, get rid of everything, that's what you end up with. You end up
No, I
with
mean, okay, well, that will all change. Let's say that's all going to change. But I'm literally just looking at me and you. If we each have $1 million in the bank, we're not competing anymore. We're going to go out to dinner. We're going to go have a good time. We're going to have a barbecue on Saturday. We don't care.
Right.
There's no keeping up with the Joneses anymore.
So there's no moving of the money supply because everybody has an unlimited supply of money, which means that money isn't worth anything. Well, okay, but then what's the incentive to do anything that relates to growth to receive? See, your answer is going to be love. I know it's going to be love. You love, therefore you'll do stuff, right? But what if someone next to you is doing more than you're doing? Do they have, what's their incentive? Do they have it?
I think the incentive is intrinsic. Whatever it is that we love to do, we're going to do more of. And it's not about money. So we're not jealous anymore. There's no inequity. I just love it. Like if I just love to garden and I've got prized tomatoes and I've got a lot of them and the whole neighborhood can have my tomatoes, what do I care? I'm not going to look at you
What
and
if,
go, well, where are your tomatoes?
but what if I love to work on my car and you don't like, a greasy V8 block taken apart in your front yard? And I'm
Why are
your
you doing
neighbor.
that? Oh, your name or neighbors?
Yeah, because I like to do it. I like to take my car apart.
But that has more to do about me than money. That's just me, not approving of your lifestyle.
Yes, but you're not supposed to not approve my lifestyle because you don't need anything. You don't need to care about me. How do you police me in that situation? How do you stop me? You with love, you walk up and say, John, I really wish you wouldn't work on your car. I'd say, well, I don't like your tomatoes either.
Well, I would say that that's not really much different than where we're at today. There are plenty of neighborhoods where people work on their cars in the driveway. And, that's the neighborhood. Then
All
there's other
right.
neighborhoods where people don't do that.
So what's the difference then between that neighborhood today and the neighborhood you're describing? Same situation.
Maybe. But the I would say typically the neighborhood where everybody's working on their own car, they don't have $1 million in the bank.
That's right. But okay. So is unlimited wealth then the common denominator that works? But there's no value in the wealth. So you're taking it away,
That's
right?
not, well,
Yeah.
what I'm saying is that there's no need for the struggle anymore. I'm sure these people who, have their houses a wreck or front yard or, parts everywhere and this and that, it's all about money. If there was a boatload of money, you'd get rid of all the junk and you wouldn't be working on your own car.
The money comes from a reserve, comes from somewhere. It doesn't just fall out of the sky. The money comes, is printed, is distributed. It's there, it's chipped. There it is. Here's your sack of money today. And if it
But
has no value, I mean, that's how we destroy societies, is give them worthless money.
it's
Overprint the money until it's worthless.
wait. That's the way we're operating today. The dollar
Yes.
has zero value, zero. And everyone is broke except for the elite. But when you
Okay.
redistribute the money,
Yeah.
right? Okay, so the tide raises all boats, right? We're all okay. We're all abundant. Right now, there's so much money in the world, but then we've got hoarders. So we don't
All
have
right.
hoarders anymore. We get rid of the hoarders, and then all of that abundance flows back to the people.
All right. Next time we talk, we're going to talk about the French Revolution and see
All
how it worked.
right. Okay. Because we're going to assume that history repeats itself.
So you've already shot me down, right? Before you started.
Yes, John, we'll talk about that.
You're
All
wonderful.
right. I
You're
love you.
wonderful. I love you too.
I'll see you. Bye.
Bye.